B-Pod Studios.
This is Felger.
Felgstradamus.
And Maz.
You're not going to get anybody half decent for free.
Presented by DraftKings on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
There's just no way of, you know, basically packing up the Lakers for 3 weeks and taking them to Texas to do it. Like, players don't want to do it. They've got families. They don't want to be traveling during times like this. They want to work out at their own facilities. And you can't do that with, like, 20 of the 30 teams in the league. Or even if you want to limit the playoff teams, you can't do it with, like, half the playoff teams that are in the league. It's a nice thought, Maz, that the NBA has about doing something like that. But I've been on the phone all week, and nobody has even presented one type of credible way of doing it. And every time I talk to general managers, they laugh at the idea. It's just not possible to do it unless every team opens their facility. By the way, I have no problem with these facilities being open in states that have loosened their restrictions because, look, these guys are athletes. They're basketball players. If it's not at their team facility, they're going to a damn Equinox. Like, they're going to find a place to work out. And they might as well be working out at a sanitized facility as opposed to, like, you know, 24-hour fitness where they might catch some.
That was Chris Mannix on with us earlier, Sports Illustrated, NBC Sports Boston, on what I thought was a setback or a reality check for the NBA. And what he's talking about there is trying to square away the NBA opening up its buildings for their players to come in and work out, except what do you do if you're in a location that still has stay-at-home orders, like here, through May 18th now, according to Charlie Baker today, or in California through May 15th, I think the date is, and the NBA has said May 8th. These teams may start bringing in players for individual workouts or small workouts at team facilities starting next Friday. So how do you square that away? And Mannix says that the Lakers aren't going to pack up and move to a state that has, you know, looser restrictions just so they can, you know, go in and take jump shots. So the NBA has to figure that out. One of many things they have to figure out, and, you know, not the least of which, is that they originally said this Friday, in 4 days, that if you're in a state that is starting to loosen restrictions and allowed the buildings to open, that you could go work out at your own team facilities on a limited basis. It was supposed to be this Friday. And I think the impetus was Georgia, the state of Georgia, which, you know, again, last week opened up, started to roll out the reopening of their economy and businesses. And so I think the NBA thought, okay, Georgia's opening up, the Atlanta Hawks can open up their building. Few players can go in there and shoot around, and we can start opening this up at the league level. Until the Atlanta Hawks said on Friday, no, actually, we're not ready. They went, no, we want to see how it plays out in the state of Georgia, how this new normal plays out in the state of Georgia with the governor opening up businesses. We want to see if the state can handle it and what the lay of the land is before we actually open up these buildings. And the other team said, well, wait a minute. If they can work out, how come we can't work out? Our buildings are still locked, you know, on order of the governor, at, you know, in whatever state, Massachusetts, New York, California, etc. So the NBA has to square that all away. And so the NBA said, well, next Friday then. Next Friday. Now, I still don't know what that does for Massachusetts or the Celtics. So next Friday, the Atlanta Hawks can go to their building if the Hawks open it up. But the Celtics can't because we're still at these stay-at-home orders and the quarantine orders through the 18th, which I think is, I'm sorry, kind of silly that now we're 6 weeks into this thing and we do have a little bit more of a grip on it, don't we? We do. We've gotten more testing. We're understanding the limitations of the disease, the parameters of the disease. Knock on wood, the hospitals are not overrun. It does look like that the peak is, you know, starting to flatten and all these things. And we can't get the Red Auerbach Center open for a couple hours for some guys to go in and shoot some jumpers. I think that's kind of silly. I think that's crazy, in fact, that they can't. I mean, Jimmy Stewart, Billy Lanny, and I can come into this building every day and do 4 hours here of sports radio, but Marcus Smart and Jason Tatum can't go into the gym and shoot some jumpers? How does that make any sense?
It doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't. And look, I hope on some level, and I don't know, maybe this makes me some kind of jackass, but I hope that the Celtics have been doing this anyway. And that, you know, they because Chris Mannix brought it up, that certainly these teams are capable of, you know, hiring a private company to provide them with viral tests and that they can then, you know, examine their players, check them to see if they have the virus, and let them in the gym to shoot so they keep tabs on them. Like, to me, I wish they would just allow this because, again, he brought up a great point. A lot of these guys, with the exception of Jason Tatum, who apparently didn't want to touch a basketball for a month, were working out anyway and going to their own places. You know, maybe they were outside, but maybe they were going to an Equinox or whatever else. And if that's the case, you probably are better off just wiping down your own facility and making sure that you're managing the people going through there and letting them use, so at least you know they're in a sanitary place.
So, I mean, like, come on. If we acknowledge that these sports, even without fans in the stands, are still vital to the economy, that they're still good for morale, that we still want to prioritize getting these leagues back, and I think most of us feel that way, then can we open up the Auerbach Center so these guys can go in and shoot some jumpers, for crying out loud?
Like, yeah, I'm with Maz on this, that I hope that they've already been doing this, that offends some people. But, you know, you look at this 16-page memo that the league sent to the teams, and it's exhausting, and I get it. And you have to make sure you're or at least looking like you're doing your due diligence when it comes to safety. But I feel like, I don't know, once you read it earlier and looking at it again, I feel like it's a let's cover our ass type of memo. Like, it's
So this to me was a setback. The league said you can come in and players can come into the team facilities to start working out. Not this Friday. They moved it back to next Friday under these conditions. A maximum of 4 players allowed at a time. They would have to wear face masks inside the facilities until they start working out. Any staff members present would have to wear face masks and gloves. And a minimum distance of 12 feet would be required between all people. So presumably the players can't post each other up or defend each other or do one-on-one drills. They have to keep a distance of 12 feet, which, you know, for
for Ben Simmons.
I was going to say, guys who don't know how to play defense, that's fine. They're going to lag off. You know, Kyrie Irving doesn't have to worry about that. But, you know, so you have to keep 12 feet a distance between everybody. Players who return to their home team markets from out of town would have to quarantine themselves for 14 days before being allowed back. All equipment used by players, including basketballs, will have to be disinfected before being used again. Players will not be allowed to share towels. And teams will not be permitted to make steam rooms, saunas, cold tubs, oxygen chambers, or chirotherapy chambers available. So those are all closed. Teams will have to designate a staff member as a facility hygiene officer to oversee all new policies. Okay.
Billy. Is that like chief baseball officer?
Billy Lanny is. Well, Billy took on a new title. He's not just our director of communications. He's also our facility hygiene officer. Players will have to enter the facility alone, without family members, friends, or personal security. All cell phones, keys, and other often touch items must be cleaned and disinfected upon entry to the facility. No head coaches or assistant coaches can be part of voluntary workouts. NBA players are also still prohibited from working out in public health clubs, fitness centers, or gyms. Some individual teams had some other things, like the Florida Sun Sentinel says the Miami Heat's going to have to change their entire entry system to their building because they utilize fingerprint technology and you touch a keypad, so they don't want that anymore. They have to change that. The Lakers said that they will have a designated rebounder for each player who will wear gloves and sterilize sneakers. So each individual guy gets his own rebounder who's geared up in the gloves and mask and sterilized sneakers. Some Lakers' planned precautionary measures include players having their temperature taken while they are in their cars when they arrive at the facility and then answering questions to a designated medical professional before being granted access. The team, the Lakers, will also provide players with PPE, and should a player leave his mask at home, one will be provided upon arrival. Okay, this was all done. This is all in place. So 3 or 4 guys can show up and shoot jumpers.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's so exhausting, and I get it. But, you know, so does this memo also appease scientists and medical experts? If so, you then go to your players and say, guys, you comfortable actually having a real practice? And if they say yes, you go have a real practice.
Okay, also the Lakers, there will be slotted workout times to prevent overcrowding. Players will be scheduled in groups of up to 4, each getting their own half court for 90-minute workout periods with ample time between sessions for cleaning and sterilization. The Lakers are also considering conducting a dry run of every step a player would go through when he reports to the facility and undergoes a workout and recording it to video so that instructions can be distributed to the team, sources said. Can you
believe? Good heavens.
So this is all for 3 or 4 guys showing up to shoot jumpers. What are they going to do? That's a 16-page memo just for these 4-person shoot-arounds. How long is the memo going to be when you pack in 2 teams with 2 training staffs, full referee crew, media, stadium staff, all of that for full season games? So when I read that, I felt like, oh, my God, we're a million miles away. We're a million miles away.
I want to know what you're going to do to sterilize the sneakers. Like, you know, what do you put them in the microwave? Take them out or what?
One of those, like, yeah, one of those UV wands. Yeah. But whatever. Just think of all those steps just to get four guys to shoot jumpers.
Oh, it's preposterous.
The dedicated sanitized rebounder, sanitized Rodman. Come on.
This is why that if testing is not put in place, forget it.
Right. This is my point.
There's no shot.
This is not feasible.
There's just no shot, let alone having to hire a team hygiene officer.
I mean,
that one gets me, because if we do that at our place, I nominate Zoe.
Listen, I'm all for safety, and I was all for the shutdowns when they happened. I think for the most part, they've done the right things. But now 6 weeks into it, you're telling me that the guy needs a dedicated rebounder geared up in the PPE, fully sanitized, with the temperature, like, really? Just to get four guys to shoot jumpers in an empty gym? Like, come on, that's not feasible. That's not sustainable. Either you got to lighten that up. Either you got to dip your toe into the water a little bit more, take a little bit more of a risk, or scrap the whole thing till we have testing and the guy doesn't have to douse his sneakers in sanitizer before he steps onto the floor to rebound for the guy. Okay.
I mean, look, again, it's ridiculous. And remember, we had Paul Sachs on at the Brigham a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, now the last time. And you asked him about the whole grocery routine. And do you remember what he said?
He said, I don't do it.
He said, we just control the stuff that we do the stuff that we know works. So we wash our hands, we bring home our groceries, we wash our hands, we sanitize, and then if we touch them, we do it again, and we don't put our hands to our face. In other words, rational, controllable stuff. You go through those measures, what's the point of going to the gym at all?
So, like, you know, this is the pot calling the kettle black right here, because I'm still with the grocery triage in my garage, and I wipe down like a OCD maniac, like a complete neurotic nut job. So, like, if I were, I admit it, if I were on the team and I were going to shoot, I'd bring the hand wipes and I'd be wiping down the ball in between every shot, like, because I'm that guy, I'm OCD, I'm getting nuttier by the day. So I don't mean to cast aspersions, but how do you plan? If you have to go through all of that for a four-person shoot-around, how do you possibly expect to have everything in place for 25 guys, you know, between the two rosters, never mind, again, all the support staff and the referees? It's impossible. It's an impossible ask. They're not going to get it done unless they have testing. And, you know, you're not wiping down every inch of every surface every second of the day.
Mike, just quickly, too, the other thing is, what's the point? If you can't, in a workout, if you can't do one-on-one drills against another guy, then you are quite literally better off staying at home with a basketball hoop in your driveway and working out there. What's the point of going into the gym at all?
Basketball hoop in your driveway. Funny you should mention that, Maz. If you're watching on the NBC Sports Boston simulcast, maybe you can cue up a little highlight going to the commercial. And when we come back, I do want to get to this major league plan. This major league plan is pretty good. With your calls at 617-779-0985.
Boston's home for sports. Failure and Mass. 98.5 The Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Never be left out of the conversation.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Belger.
Good God, man. Have some pride.
That guy's psychotic.
98.5 Sports Hub.
Stop it. One GM said to me tonight, if we need a 15-page memo from the league to get one guy in and out of our building just so we can take shots, get shots up, like, maybe the timing's not right.
That's exactly how I react. Like, you see, you can get four guys in there, but then you can't use a cold tub and you can't use a sauna and nobody can touch anything. And you got to wipe anything down. And if you use your cell phone, I mean, I could keep going through, like, the specifics from this memo, and it's mind-numbing. So, I mean, that's where I come off. And I'm not trying to be, like, the negative guy here. It's just, like, this, even when they get back in the gym, like, it doesn't feel like anybody's closer to anything. And I guess that's what felt daunting to me. Is that the sense that you get from in and around the league, that it's just – that the pace is going to be glacial here?
Part of it was there was some fear in the league that when the state of Georgia opens or the state of Florida opens, that players in other marketplaces who couldn't get into gyms would start migrating to those areas of the country and go to an Equinox, go to a public gym, and the league didn't want that.
So that I get, but if the 16-page memo with the restrictions on coming back for the shoot-around are the guidepost to getting this league back and them playing again, they have no shot. I mean, just start with the 12 feet of distancing. I know there's some lousy defense in that league, but it ain't that lousy. I mean, you have to, at some point, they're going to have to come close to each other and exchange some sweat and some breath, et cetera, until we get to that point, forget about it.
Otherwise, you're watching Harlem Globetrotter games. It'll be like, you know, 150 to 146 is the final.
Right, no, you're watching the Houston Rockets, right? Like, right. They have no problem with the 12 feet of distancing. Anyway, here's a Major League Baseball plan. Bob Nightingale, key guy, USA Today, longtime BBW. He's got a real high number, Mass. He must have the highest number left, don't you think?
Well, it's actually, when you say high number, you mean low. Like, it's based on seniority. So, like, the guy who's done it the longest is number one.
Who do you think's number one?
Ooh, Shaughnessy's got to be up there.
Oh, the old fart. You're right.
Gammons.
He's single digit, right?
Oh, Gammons. Yeah, I don't know if he has a card anymore, though. He might not be. He might be out of the club.
Say what? Gammons? you're saying Gammons is not a member of the BBWAA?
No, no. When I say that, I mean he may not be an active member anymore because he doesn't write for a living per se, not, you know, cover games. So, like, I still have a card, but I don't have a number anymore because I'm considered honorary.
Good Lord. Anyway. Bob Nightingale, very low number, high number, however you want to say that, says maybe it's a dream scenario, maybe it's premature to get excited. Then again, maybe it just might work. Major League Baseball officials have become cautiously optimistic this week that the season will start in late June and no later than July 2nd, playing at least 100 regular season games, according to three executives with knowledge of the talks. And not only would baseball be played, but it would be played in their own Major League ballparks, albeit with no fans. MLB is considering a three-division, 10-team plan in which teams play only within their division, a concept that is gaining support among owners and executives. It would abolish the traditional American and National Leagues and realign the divisions based on geography. The plan, pending approval of medical experts and providing that COVID-19 testing is available to the public, would eliminate the need for players to be in isolation and would allow them to still play at their home ballparks while severely reducing travel. The divisions would keep many of the natural rivals together while playing one another before an expanded playoff format. A look at the possible realignment structure. They have East, West, and Central. I'll just give you the East. Here's the East. Yankees, Mets, Red Sox, Nationals, Orioles, Phillies, Pirates, Blue Jays, Rays, Miami Marlins. How do you feel about that division, Mass?
I like the plan.
Red Sox are screwed.
Let me put it to you that way. No, I like the plan. Again, I like the idea of being in regular ballparks. It would satisfy the players' desire to be with their families. I mean, what you're really talking about is, you know, basically everyone being in the, you know, in their hometown, and the trips are short, right? It's all Northeast except for Florida. And so I like it. I mean, it's all contingent upon testing. And so I guess my only question would be this, Mike. If you can get on a plane and fly to Florida, why can't you get on a plane and fly to Texas?
Right. That's right. Exactly. I get the West Coast thing. But, well, either way, Maz, tell me about that division.
Okay. So look, you know,
they're the third team in that division.
Who are the first two?
Yankees, Nationals.
You don't think Tampa's better than the Red Sox?
They were last year. I don't know if they can repeat it.
So the Phillies might be better than the Red Sox. I mean, I'd have to think of some others. But, I don't know what the playoff structure is, and I know that story by Nightingale did not necessarily have all the details and how the postseason would shake out or what have you.
Well, it would be expanded playoffs. So let's just say 4 of the 10 to be, you know, that each division. Well, again, I don't want to do the math on the air.
Okay, but I will tell you that I think that the Red Sox are in the middle of the pack in that division.
Okay, he goes on to say, it's also not known whether teams would have to open the season in Arizona, Florida, and Texas for several weeks before everyone could return to their home stadium. So they're still leaving that thought open that they would start the season in those three centralized locations. Yet, Nightingale says they could squeeze in 100 to 110 games and perhaps even have several thousand fans in attendance before or during the playoffs. One of the additional benefits to playing in major league cities is it would alleviate a possible split among players who are opposed to playing the entire season in Arizona or Florida or Texas. Several high-profile players, including the Angels' Mike Trout and the Dodgers' Clayton Kershaw, expressed strong resistance to playing the season away from their families. I told you the players were going to balk at that, and why the Florida thing made more sense to me if they had off-season homes there, that the players were not going to go for the full-season bubble idea in Arizona. They're not going to go for it. Never mind the money, Maz.
Well, so look, again, on that point, it sounds like you were right. And I understand what the logic is. Again, I come back to sort of the whole idea of if they are going to put guys on planes to fly to Florida, then I think they can, you know, in a lot of ways do a little bit more than what they're doing. And the other thing is this gets back to the discussion we were just having about the Celtics in the gym. Why do they have to wait for all the restrictions to be lifted in order to play in an empty stadium? They're not going to need concession workers. They're not going to need, you know, they're going to need groundskeepers. But, you know, to me, team employees in many cases are still going to be able to work from their homes. So really, the only people you're talking about going to the ballpark are the players. They're going to have to stay a certain amount of distance from them, from each other, no matter what. And so, to me, as long as the testing is there, and again, maybe that's all connected.
Well, so here it is. Let me just read you that part of it. The most encouraging signs, the Major League Baseball officials said, is that testing is becoming more available, and more states are reopening, and more politicians, such as New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot, saying teams could play in their own ballparks this summer. MLB officials are hoping it won't be necessary to quarantine players, and normalcy will prevail once the regular season commences. But the schedule and playoff format promises to be dramatically different. So the key to all this is that everyone's getting tested, so the leagues also aren't putting themselves in a position where they're saying, we have tests and you don't. Neener, neener, neener. You know what I mean? Like, they can't. That's not just bad optics. That's just bad. Like, you can't, you know, the testing has to go to the people who need it first and correct. Then to everyone. And I've said this a million times. I don't mind them getting tests before I get it. I do mind if they get tests before medical workers get it and people who are sick get it. You know what I mean? So there's got to be widespread testing for these leagues from a PR standpoint on top of anything else to go forward, because they can't do it without this Fakakta 16-page memo in the NBA. If all these leagues are going to stick to that kind of stuff, they have no shot. It has to be widespread testing.
Oh, definitely. Look, I do wonder, though, that the closer, and I say the closer and closer we get, the further along we get into this pandemic, and the closer we get to an alleged or potential start of the season, I wonder if the plans all have a little bit more merit. So, for example, the closer, you know, I think that, remember that MLB agreed to do this antibody testing with the group out in Stanford. You know, all the samples for that have been submitted. So I wonder whether this week, maybe next week, we're going to find out what the results of that test were, whether MLB already has information that we don't have. And because I feel like with each step, we're getting a plan that is, you know, modified probably to something closer than what it's going to end up to.
Right. Well, so all the guys that are optimistic, I'm hoping that Trump told the leagues, you'll have the testing. We're all going to have the testing. The testing's going to be there. They know it. They know it. The government knows it. It's just they're rolling it out. We know by the time we get to June, July, it's going to be prevalent. Everyone's going to have all the testing they need. We're going to have all the testing we need. And so you can return with all these tests with a clear conscience because people will have the tests. And that's the path. The individual ball boys and the PPE and the sanitized shoes, that's not the path. That's not the path. That ain't going to work. I keep promising your calls. We'll get to your calls and a couple of tool bags we want to get to right after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
I'm actually higher on the current roster than a lot of people. Like, I think they can compete. I did an evaluation against the other teams in the AFC East position by position, and they came out a little bit ahead of the Bills. So I, even with, you know, the obvious trade down in quarterback, I still see them as the best team in the division. And so I don't see a ton of humongous holes on this team.
You just said you did a roster analysis where you said the Patriots still have the best roster in the AFC East, the best roster in the AFC East.
This is before the draft, yeah.
Okay. After the draft, over under 8.5.
I'm going over. I think they win at least 9, well, not at least, but 9 or 10 games. And I think, you know, and I think there's a lot of confidence in the building that they can coach up Jarrett Stidham to execute, or Brian Hoyer, that they can coach him up to execute as good as, you know, Josh Darnold or Josh Allen or whoever else is quarterback in the division this year. So, yeah, I agree with them. 9 or 10 wins.
I'll take that bet.
Greg Bedard earlier, you can listen to it on 985thesportshub.com or the app. He's confident. How about that? Let's zip through some calls. We want to get to some tool bags. You've been waiting patiently. Steve in Yarmouth, quick.
Hey, listen, Mike. I 100% agree with you on the Patriots not tanking thing. I mean, anybody who thinks that Belichick's going to tank this season is absolutely nuts. In 2014, 16, and 18, the Patriots put out DVD specials after winning the Super Bowl, blowing the media, saying nobody believed in them. And now nobody actually believes in them, and they're just going to accept it, and Belichick's just going to tank. It's nuts, and I can't stand people calling up saying they're going to tank for Lawrence. So I do agree with you on that point.
Thank you, Steve. Great point. It's not in the cards. It's not happening. Give it up. Devin in Los Angeles. Go ahead, Devin.
Hey, what's up, guys? I just don't get why we should care about the fifth-round pick kicker's tattoo. Like, why is that such a big deal?
Well, why are you calling on it and waiting for a half hour to get on the phone about it?
It was just, I love this show. I listen every day, but that segment was painful, bro.
Okay, bro. And you hung around and called us about it. I'm sorry. We're moving on. Here's John in Portland. Go ahead, John.
Show critic.
Michael, Tony, and Jim, I would say that with the draft, picking two tight ends, I've always said if you looked at a basketball player who doesn't make the Division I NBA, someone who's 6'6", 270, can run the court 94 feet sprinting, that's 31 yards, 50 feet wide. As long as the guy doesn't mind about getting hit, and now he will listen to how to block, I think you might have something on your hands, and you could get a seventh-round pick.
Okay, let me just – do you have any idea what that guy's talking about, Mass?
No, I think he's just saying that you could draft guys from other sports. I mean, didn't LeBron play football, right? LeBron was a receiver, I think. Anyway, I think that's sort of his point, but go ahead.
All right.
The part that he sort of glossed over, I think it's comical, is as long as you don't mind getting hit. Oh, yeah, that little thing.
Other than that.
Okay, no problem, yeah.
Okay, let's do this. A couple of tool bags, a little tool bag segment. First tool bag, Giants coach Joe Judge. What's your issue there, Mass?
Okay, so I saw this, I don't remember if I saw it on Twitter, Instagram, whoever, but Judge, in talking to Andrew Thomas and Xavier McKinney, who were the highest picks for the Giants in this draft, said, when you talk to the media, no predictions, no comparisons. Be grateful for the opportunity, all right? I don't want to hear anything about Super Bowls or any of that crap. You got that? This guy is such a hardo. It isn't even funny. Like, if I were one of those kids on that phone, and they're kids, and they just get drafted, so they're going to be on their best behavior. You know what I would have said to this guy? Who do you think you are? Bill Parcells? Like, the way he's, again, I don't want to hear any of that crap, all right? Okay? He sounds like Parcells, except he's the jackass special teams coach who was in charge of the Patriots wide receivers last year, and they were one of the worst groups in the league. Like, this guy feels to me like he thinks he really is Ulysses S. Grant there running the New York Giants. Holy crap, is this guy irritating. If they go 4-12, he's going to look like a bigger jackass than any other coach in the league.
What a tool.
Holy smokes.
This guy comes across as a total tool bag.
He just like carries himself like he's a Giants fan that lives in Secaucus or something. Like,
he thinks he's the big tuna.
Dude, yeah. you've been telling guys to run down and cover punts for the last 10 years. Like, he does. He talks like he's a Newt Rockne. Oh, my God.
Like, I look at him and say, wow, you'd think this guy was like Lombardi taking over the Redskins, or coming in with all his rings and his titles, and listen to him, man. He knows how to do it. He hasn't done jack yet.
Tool bag number two, Isaiah Thomas, the original Isaiah Thomas. Maz, your thoughts?
Murray, you want to go first or you want me to?
Well, I love the saltiness that Michael Jordan still holds against this little prick all these years later. This last episode of, or one of the last episodes of The Last Dance on Sunday night, it really got into those battles in the late 80s between the Pistons and the Bulls finally getting over that hump of Detroit. But the bitterness that Jordan still has towards Isaiah Thomas and the Pistons overall and their lack of sportsmanship once they swept them and got past them in the East Finals when they ultimately ended up winning their first championship. Oh, it was so great. And he's such a little baby. He is one of the great frauds in the history of professional sports. Is that the first Isaiah Thomas?
Oh, and that's the word, Murray. That is the word, fraud. And so I'm with Jordan on this, where Jordan said, I don't care what Isaiah Thomas says. There's nothing he can do or say that will convince me that he's not an a-hole. And I agree with Jordan. Isaiah, to me, one of the great all-time frauds in the history of professional sports. In fact, if you were to say to me, let's have a poll. Who are the biggest frauds in the history of pro sports? Isaiah Thomas is in the running for number one. Now, I'd have to think about the others, but Isaiah is a runaway candidate for the top spot. Absolutely. He's one of these guys that, at the time, he gives you the smiley face and the soft voice, and he is a weenie. He's always been a weenie. He's a little baby. There's a reason none of the other guys wanted him on the Dream Team, and I'm not in for necessarily bullying, persecuting, or backing someone into a corner and being 12-on-1. But in this case, I'm all for it. One of the great frauds of all time. Isaiah Thomas, I don't believe a word that ever comes out of his mouth, ever.
But this whole thing, Isaiah and Michael not shaking hands and them still snipping at each other is such a uniquely NBA story. I'm telling you. And I don't mean to NBA bash because I've come around on the sport. I think it's a good league. But sometimes I look at it and go, this is just little kids. These are a bunch of broads. I mean, there's no other sports, no other sport. Did Wayne ever shake Mario's hand? And boy, what did Tom and Peyton say to each other? Yet in basketball, it's these constant little petty little baby dramas. Did Isaiah shake Michael's hand? Michael and Isaiah. Michael versus Isaiah. And, what is Kyrie going to say to LeBron? And what is Ray's problem with Kevin and those 08 Celtics are still pissing on each other for what? I have no idea. Bunch of broads, Real Housewives of the NBA. It's just so, that sport. Kobe, how does my ass taste? There's just a million examples. What did Draymond say to Kevin? It's like, oh my God, you broads. You all sound like a bunch of broads on the E! Network. It's just that sport. And it continues with the biggest names and the biggest figures in the sport. Bunch of ladies in a sewing circle. Jesus.
I love it.
I guess there is some entertainment value, but it exists in no other sport. No other sport do we get those petty little dramas. Can I give you two other things that just, have struck me during the just watching the special?
Just quickly, though, on your point about Jordan and Isaiah, it was almost 25 years ago.
I know.
They're still bickering.
Oh, I love that's what makes it so good, that hate is still burning inside Jordan. Oh, good for him.
It's just, is it hate or is it, what is
it? It's pettiness. Yeah, I mean, he got with the rest of them and purposely made sure he wasn't on that 92 Dream Team. That's some classic, classic pettiness. Oh, I love that.
And Isaiah couldn't sterilize Jordan's sneakers. Let's not even go down that road.
But I mean, to me, the most boring story in all of Boston sports is what happened to the 08 Celtics? How come Ray won't talk to Kevin? That is on the list of Boston sports topics, number 1,000 out of 1,000. Like, who cares that these two broads are still snipping at each other? Who cares? Do you ever get that in any other sport? Oh, what did Tom say to Wes? Why do Tom and Wes we don't do it in any other sport other than basketball. And again, I don't mean to sound so sexist with the broad thing, but it just comes to mind. It's just what it sounds like. It sounds like it's some reality show on the E! Network. God, it's ridiculous. But anyway, Jordan, ultimate competitor, right? This is my second point. Jordan being, just credit for being this ultimate competitor. What a competitor. What a competitor. What a competitor. How are the Charlotte Hornets the last time anyone checked?
Wretched.
Okay. He has turned into the least competitive NBA owner in the entire association. Never goes over the luxury tax, never pays anybody, never puts out a winning product. Everything that people say in the league is that he just surrounds himself with his cronies from his hometown, and he's just, he's a bum. As an owner, he's a freaking bum. So what happened to this? I want to tear your heart out, rip your guts out, stomp on your head, ultimate winner, now that he owns an NBA franchise. What happened to that guy?
Well, you know the answer to that. He's not playing.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
And
yes,
so what? He doesn't different. Care to lose as an owner?
Yeah, there's I just only don't... so much you can really control.
Yeah,
as an owner.
I don't.
Oh, you can spend.
I don't think it's the same. I just don't. And I think that it's one of those things where, like, yeah, you know, in his way, is he making money or not? And I don't know if he is or he isn't. But I think that's the way he judges it. Now he's probably individually competitive still.
I think Jordan's turned into a loser, is what I think. I think as a player on the floor, ultimate winner, great competitor. I'm not taking anything away from him there. As a man in this stage of his life, he feels like a loser to me. I mean, he's an absolute disgrace as an owner, loser as an owner. And what's his personal, like, what's his gambling situation? Does he still have a gambling problem?
I don't know. That house looks pretty awesome to me. It looks like
good question.
He's winning
his life. I don't know.
So what does that mean, Murray?
I don't know. Like, based on watching this thing, he looks like he's living large. It doesn't come off as a loser to me.
Well, but no, but does he have a gambling problem?
I don't know.
Probably still. I don't know that he would ever shake that. I just, he might be one of the few guys, though, that will never catch up with.
Yeah.
There were, I think that, doesn't he still make something absolutely absurd from Nike every year?
Yeah.
But if he loses millions of dollars a year at a blackjack table, I don't know, that's a winner?
Yeah, if you can afford it, everyone should have a vice or two.
Again, Mark, I was like, what's in your head? Like, that's cool?
I have no problem with it.
A like, gambling if addict?
If he can afford those kind of losses and he enjoys it, more power to you.
Oh, I think it's sick. I think it's a disease, sickness. I think it's gross. I don't know. The ultimate competitor who can't stand to lose feels like he's more than fine with it in the NBA. And as an owner, it feels like he's more than fine with it as an NBA owner. He doesn't care. He cares one whit about winning down there. I haven't seen one indication of that. Anybody, how he's spent or how he is hired or how he's built that franchise. I think he's kind of a loser, frankly. I mean, I do.
I mean, look, he's been a bad owner. But, you know, as for the gambling thing, I mean, I don't think there's any question. I think he is a gambling addict. I think he probably still does gamble like a crazy man. My only point was, I'm not sure he can gamble enough to lose all his money if those reports of what he still makes from Air Jordan are right.
I mean, look, I don't know what's the truth with him. I just know the stories that are out there and the rumors that are out there. So I just ask it as a question. What's the issue with his gambling problem? Does he still have a gambling problem? And is this series get it at all? Are they going to mention it at all? What a loser franchise that he's in charge of and how he's managed it into the ground and doesn't feel it to me like he cares about winning one bit down there. The ultimate winner, the ultimate competitor. An absolute loser as an NBA owner. And one final thing. It also occurred to me why the Bulls bore me, and they always did, is they got to that 91 conference finals against Detroit when they lost to Detroit. Then they got to 91. When they finally got Detroit, that was when Detroit walked off the floor without shaking their hands. And that was the big, you know, threshold series for the Bulls, right? They had to get past Detroit. They finally got past Detroit. They swept them in four. Then they went to the finals and beat L.A. in five. We all know the stat that Jordan never had a Game 7 in the finals. Do you know he almost never had Game 7s, period? I went back and looked it up. Here's how the Bulls won their titles, their road to the titles. And this is back in the days when the first round was a five-game series. So in 91, when they first won their first championship, they beat the Knicks in three, then Philly in five, then Detroit in four, and then L.A. in five. Yawn. In 92, they beat Miami in three. Then they beat the Knicks in seven. Congratulations. There was a Game 7 win. Then they beat Cleveland in six, Portland in six. Oh, here's a good one. In 96, they beat Miami in three, the Knicks in five, Orlando in four, Seattle in six. Woo! That had me at the edge of my seat. Maybe in 97, they got me in 97 too. The Bullets in three, the Hawks in five, the Heat in five, Utah in six. There were no greats. They never had a great series, Maz. Like, I remember a little bit them and the Knicks had a little thing in that 1-7 game series. So fine, there's one. But they never had a back and forth with anyone. They never had a great series, it feels like.
Didn't they lose the first two games in Chicago against the Jazz?
So
I don't remember. They might have, Jimmy. I don't remember.
They beat them in six both times. So in 98, the Nets in three, Charlotte in five, Indy in seven in the conference finals, and Utah in six. Again, 97. Bullets in three, Atlanta in five, Miami in five, Utah in six. Like, woo-wee! In 93, it was Atlanta in three, Cleveland in four, Knicks in six, Phoenix in six. Like, there was no... So this isn't their fault, but I remember why they didn't grip me at the time. There was never a great series.
So Jordan and Hakeem were in the same draft, though, right?
Yeah.
So what you know, and I know Jordan was...
So it was 94, 95 when Houston won.
Yeah.
When he was out.
Those 2 years when Jordan was out is when Houston won.
Oh, and why was he out? Are we going to get to that, ESPN? Are we going to get to that? So I'm kind of more... The series is entertaining. The Rodman stuff was great. Jordan's the best player of all time. I think he's the greatest player of all time. But are we going to take a real look or not? Are we going to take a real look at what he's become?
I wouldn't hold your breath on that.
Are we going to take a real look at what he's done with his NBA franchise? Are we going to take a real look at his gambling problems? Are we going to take a look at that? Because otherwise, I'm not fully interested unless we take a look at those things. Final word comes your way next.
Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And streaming anywhere you go. Sports Hub app.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And the final word brought to you by Town Fair Tire. For the guaranteed lowest prices on tires, go to Town Fair Tire because nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. All right, in case you didn't know.
Nobody.
Yet.
Sorry, Jim, nobody.
Maz is now on Cameo as of late last week. Oh, feels like business has been pretty brisk, Maz, right?
Yeah, no, it's been pretty good. I am grateful that a lot of people have reached out. It's been a lot of fun. So hopefully we'll keep it rolling, Murray.
So correct me if I'm wrong, for about $25.
Oh, it's up to 25?
Well, actually, my rate has gone up. They took that out of my hands.
Oh, wow.
So we got pretty good response, and they told me they didn't want me to get too inundated. I'm just going by what they said.
Good job.
Well, it's up to 40.
The new $40 rate on Maz, you could get something like this.
Hey, Rick, it's Tony Maserati from 98.5 The Sports Hub. Your son-in-law, Mark, reached out to me. So let me get this straight. After the Falcons Super Bowl, you decided to set on fireworks like you're some kind of freaking genius. And after lighting them and trying to run away, you snapped an ankle. Dude, I don't know how old you are, but let me just tell you this. They make television shows about people like you. In fact, there was a very popular series at one time. You know what it was called? Jackass.
It's excellent. That's still good value. $40 for that?
So that guy was actually his father-in-law. It was like, I don't know if I would have the balls to send my father-in-law a message. I called him a jackass.
Exactly. Anyway.
That's very good, Maz. And call of the day goes to Bob in Millbury.
Bob in Millbury. Go ahead, Bob. What do you got?
Bobby.
Sleep.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, yeah, we put him to sleep. Listen to that. Bobby!
The old 4 o'clock.
That is awesome.
That's tremendous. And we weren't even talking baseball. So there we go. Another riveting program. Yeah, we keep them riveted there, Maz.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, we got them dialed in. I can't say that I necessarily blame them.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.